Hey listeners, this podcast was recorded a few months before its release, so you might notice a few references that are slightly out of date.
To make a short story long, which actually might be the case, but that's usually what happens. I do make a short story long, but my intent here is to make a long story short. Hello, and welcome to The Conversation with Susan
and Whitney,
the podcast where two friends from college discuss shared interests, insights, and how we're navigating our lives today.
This is an ongoing conversation about how we're surviving
and thriving.
We discuss the important
and the trivial
and other fun topics in between.
I'm Susan Field, a writer and teacher in Philadelphia.
And I'm Whitney Gould, a writer and marketing director in New Hampshire. Susan, you're the kind of friend who distracted me with good plays and musicals and movies with James McAvoy in them when I used to live with roommates and needed a break from them.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure to bring James McAvoy into your life, Whitney. Becoming Jane is still one of our favorite movies.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Whitney, you're the kind of friend who, when I was feeling distressed about being confrontational with my roommate, you texted me comforting words of wisdom that made me feel a lot better.
That's what friends are for, Susan, especially really awkward roommate situations.
That's right.
In this episode, we are going to talk about roommates during the current COVID age. We'll talk about how to navigate some of the COVID-related roommate situations we found ourselves in over the last year, how to stay sane with roommates, or in my case, with a husband, and lastly, how to part ways with them. And I'm talking about roommates, not husbands, not parting ways with my husband.
Well, I'm sure Nate will be happy to hear that. He wouldn't want to find out about the divorce through our podcast. So,
right. So, he would not.
That's right. We're going to break this topic down into categories, discuss, then offer helpful tips and hopefully some humor to navigate each one. Lastly, at the end of this episode, we will discuss what we are currently reading and watching. First, I want to say that this episode is particularly timely for me as I have just ended a stressful roommate situation less than 2 weeks ago.
Susan, can you briefly tell us what happened with your roommate?
Yeah, definitely. But before I get into it, I just want to say that now with vaccinations and the COVID restrictions easing, we are able to get out of the house more and life is starting to get back to a somewhat normal state. So we might not find ourselves in these exact living circumstances that we just went through, but I think there's a lot that can be learned from what we went through in terms of living with roommates during a pandemic and the subsequent quarantines.
Yes, absolutely, Susan. I agree.
Yes. So last summer, my roommate who I lived with for 3 years moved out of our apartment in order to move in with her boyfriend. So I needed to find a new roommate. So I'm going to tell you the story of how this happened. Basically, I put a post on Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist, and I was looking for a while and interviewing some roommates, which was actually tricky because during COVID, I couldn't have anyone come into the apartment to see it because, we weren't supposed to be interacting with other people and whatnot. So most of my interviews and everything were just through Zoom. But I wasn't having much luck with Craigslist and everything. So I actually randomly went on this roommate app called Roomie.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I hadn't either, but I just Googled like, what are the best roommate apps? Because I was figuring like, oh, maybe like Craigslist is really out of date. Like, what are the cool kids using, right? So right. This Roomie app is almost like a dating app, just in the sense of it gives you like a survey to fill out, and then it gives you a compatibility score with how compatible you could be with certain people. So myself and who ended up being my roommate, we'll call her Mabel for the purposes of this story. Mabel and I were compatible and we connected and decided to do a FaceTime call. And, so I interviewed her and I thought it went really well.
So why did you think it went really well?
Yeah. So that's interesting. I mean, first of all, we were really compatible on the score, but in hindsight, I'm thinking, some of the things I filled out on that survey, like, they would ask you, like, are you a morning person? Are you a night owl? And, some of your different living habits and cleaning and stuff. But I actually think that maybe the person I was pre-COVID is different than who I actually am now. Because I feel like COVID actually caused my habits and lifestyle to change.
Also, I can't imagine this roommate survey took any COVID-related questions into light.
It did not. So yeah, that's actually the first category that I wanted to talk about was the screening the roommates, because, even though now, like I said, restrictions are easing, we're still COVID's not going away, right? And we don't know if in the future there might be some relapses and things. So I definitely feel like we still need to proceed with caution, right? Yeah. So I thought I did a good job interviewing her, but I think, as you mentioned, I was screening her more for basically normal circumstances, not COVID ones. And in my defense, like, no one knew how long this was going to last. And by last, I think it was June when I interviewed her. I feel like with summer and everything, it seemed like things were starting to normalize a little bit. And I really had no idea that COVID was going to continue far into the fall and beyond. And, you know, we'd go on lockdown again. So I really was planning for normal circumstances. I thought I was going to go back to work. I thought she would be at work. We wouldn't see each other that much. But as it turned out, we were at home together all the time, every day, all day. So,
yeah, I understand how that feels, because my husband and I were in the exact same situation. So Susan, what would you have done differently now that you didn't do when you were screening Mabel?
Yeah, great question. So I think it's really important to ask more anecdotal questions and, you know, maybe present some hypothetical scenarios and things, because I think I kind of based my screening on her on how well we sort of vibed, like how well our natural social conversation was, which is great, but that obviously gave me no information about sort of who she was or how she lived. Right. So there's a really great quote that I always refer back to by Annie Dillard that says, "How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives." So right. I think this idea is, if we try to get a sense of how someone spends their days, right, it gives us this overall idea of like what it's going to be like to live with them.
This makes me think of kind of like when you're interviewing for a job and mm-hmm. you ask, what's a typical day in this job look like? Like, what's a typical day in your day-to-day routine look like?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I really think that maybe something like that could have helped. And as far as maybe some specific quarantine questions, I could have asked, like, you know, when we first went into lockdown, how did you handle that quarantine period? You know, what were you doing to keep yourself busy? Like, were you going anywhere? Were you seeing anybody? And other stuff too, just general stuff. Like, have you ever had a disagreement with your roommate? How did you handle it? Could you walk me through the COVID protocols that you follow on a daily basis? Maybe I would have asked too, like, are you involved in activities or sports? Because that ended up being something that was a conflict between us. So right. Yeah, in terms of what to ask, I think always think worst case scenario, because I'm very positive and I feel like I'm always like, oh, that won't happen, you know, but I feel like you really do have to interview as if the bad things are going to happen, right? You have to go in being prepared and not just with this extremely rosy outlook.
This really is reminding me more and more of a job interview, in that you have to ask some sort of hard questions, some situational questions, some behavioral questions, so that you can get a full picture of who this person that you would be living your day-to-day life with every day. Because, you know, whenever you're interviewing for a job, you're interviewing for like an investment in a person to fulfill certain duties. And in the same way, during COVID, this roommate, you know, was sort of in the same situation where you were investing a lot of time and, you know, money, your rent money, in living with this person, and you needed it to work out just as much as somebody in HR needs to hire the right candidate for a job.
Yeah, definitely. So I think I would have asked some different, more in-depth questions that were erring on the side of worst case scenario. Like, for example, if I had asked her, how did you deal the first lockdown that we went through? You know, back in, I guess it was like mid-March of 2020. So she would have told me the truth, which I later found out, that as soon as New York closed down, and she was living in New York at the time, I think in Manhattan, as soon as it closed down, she left the city and fled to Mexico, just like for vacation, which like in normal circumstances, I feel like, oh, that's cool. Like, hey, why not like go to Mexico? But during COVID, that was a time when we were told not to travel. It was a time when we didn't really know what was happening. We were just told to stay at home. I mean, if you really realize how she handled that, like I didn't go anywhere. Like I actually had a trip to Florida planned to visit a friend of mine. I actually hadn't bought my plane tickets yet, but I was planning to go like maybe a couple weeks after COVID hit. And I canceled that trip, decided I wasn't going to fly anywhere. I was going to stay at home, like, you know, follow close protocols that we were being advised to follow, you know. So that would have been a perfect example of seeing how she sort of handled things. I don't want to say recklessly, but definitely differently than how I handled things. I think that would have given me a really good sense that like, wow, she and I have two different life philosophies, right?
Two different sets of priorities in a pandemic for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, in everybody's defense, we had never gone through a pandemic before in our lifetime. So like, you know, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. Like she probably had no idea. We didn't really know that much about how it was spreading, what was happening. But I definitely think staying in my apartment and like never leaving is completely different from just like fleeing to another country.
Right.
So yeah, you know, and I also think like I want to be careful to say like I'm not trying to judge this person or to say that she's necessarily wrong, although we were being told by the CDC not to travel, but I'm just trying to point out that we were different. So, you know, we weren't really, we weren't compatible, but I'm not saying like, oh, I'm better than she is or anything like that. You just have to see, you know, are you able to live together?
Well, and this specific example ended up coming up again because she ended up traveling again during the pandemic, during a time when travel was not advised and potentially, you know, could have brought some COVID back to your apartment, which was a major point of contention.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's like my biggest thing was that, you know, I don't think that she's necessarily wrong for doing that. Like that's her choice. But when you live with someone else, you kind of lose a little bit of your individual choice because you're kind of not an individual. You're part of a pair or maybe a trio or whatever, a quad, depending on how many people you live with. Right. So I just feel like you can't make decisions for yourself when you're not the only one to consider.
Right. Your level of risk averse behavior is not just for you anymore. It has to take another person into account.
Right. Or, you know, there's ways around it too. And this was kind of how I was trying to solve this with her. I was like, hey, all right, you know, I can't tell you what to do. That's not a choice that I would make as far as traveling. But hey, you know, you do you. But I need you to take a COVID test when you get back or we're going to isolate. Like you need to at least have that plan in place. She was, you know, okay to open to doing that, I suppose, but the idea didn't come from her. So again, you just have to communicate about this. Yeah, I guess overall, just to sum up, is to make sure that you and your roommate have the same risk assessment, right? I say, just like, are you okay with taking the same risks? Like, yeah, like you said, priorities, values, are they the same? And this term I made up, are you COVID compatible?
Right.
Are you both going to wear masks when you go outside? You know, I have to be able to trust that that person's going to be following the same things that I do, or it would be like her bringing COVID back into my home because she might not wear a mask in the airport or whatever, depending on how she believes, what she believes.
Right. It's all about kind of like what your priorities became during the pandemic, because I feel like what you said earlier, you know, before the pandemic, you were potentially a different person. So when you were thinking about who you were going to live with, maybe you weren't realizing how your priorities had changed in light of the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely not. I didn't. And it happened so fast. Like pandemic hit in March and I was interviewing a roommate in June. Like it had just been a few months and I really did think we were coming out of it. And I think a lot of people did. Like we were feeling so optimistic in the summer. Like numbers were going down here in the city. You know, no one could have ever dreamed what we went through, right? Like that that was going to happen. So, you know, I try to take this with a grain of salt. Like, I don't think I was being stupid. But again, maybe I could have been thinking worst case scenario, like what if this pandemic continues or what if it gets worse? You know, those questions should have been taken into account. And then aside from pandemic, another thing that I think everyone should consider when screening a roommate is consider age difference and stage of life.
Right.
And maybe this isn't always the case. It's almost like with dating, like sometimes an older person with a younger person works really well and other times you're just too incompatible. And that again kind of goes back to priority and values, right? Like at different ages, you're going to prioritize or value different things.
Right. And at different ages, you're going to view something like a pandemic differently for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people who were younger, and I'm not going to put words in my roommate's mouth. She didn't say this and I don't know, but I think a lot of people that I did hear talking, you know, they felt like, oh, I'm in my 20s or whatever. Like it's not going to affect me. Like, yeah, I'm young, I'm healthy, but, and yeah, I mean, I think I'm young and healthy too, but the thing was, it's not just about me or her. Right. It would be about like, okay, if she did bring it home to me, like I'm going to go home to see my family and my family is older, like older relatives. Right. So it's like this chain effect, ripple effect, right? Like it's not this insular thing where you can just think of yourself. You really have to think about how is this affecting other people? What are the repercussions? Who am I going to come in contact with? And that's what I felt that sort of perspective was missing.
Right. I mean, there's a reason that we didn't go home to see our parents over the holidays. As much as, you know, it killed us, we weren't planning on potentially bringing COVID across five state lines.
right,
to my elderly parents, right?
We were being careful and taking all those things into consideration. But aside from COVID, I still feel like age and life stage is just a difference in maybe how you conduct yourself, what your habits are, maybe even just how you treat the apartment. I mean, we talked in the last episode, like when I was 23, I had the hardest time keeping up with my dishes. My sister used to have to come over and clean my dishes. She did that. I didn't ask her to do that. She was just so nice to come and help me with the dishes. But now I don't even put anything in the sink. I immediately put it in the dishwasher. And I feel it's because I've had years to kind of see like, oh, this is going to add up. I'm going to take care of it now. But maybe somebody that's still in their 20s is still like struggling with putting dishes in the sink.
Yes.
I just feel like I've moved past some of those behaviors or those habits. And yeah, like it's hard when someone else is maybe not there yet. They're still in that habit.
Also, to be completely fair to you, you did not have a dishwasher when Barry was visiting. So I feel like, you know, you need to give yourself a little bit of credit.
That was the first time in my life I didn't have a dishwasher, because always growing up we had one. And then in my college apartment, we had a dishwasher. So you're right. That was the first time that I didn't. And I think it's all just about like time management and things. But yeah, and I can't think of another example offhand about sort of the life stage, but I just think it's maybe a maturity thing. And I'm not trying to say I'm better than her. It's just like by default, I'm like, you know, 8 to 10 years older than a certain person. Yes, just automatically, I'm probably going to be thinking a little bit differently, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Susan, I know that for even my husband and I, our priorities needed to change during COVID. We're both working from home instead of just me. Traditionally, I had been working from home. I had an entire room set aside in the house that was just my office. It was great. Suddenly, I had to share it. I had to split my desk in half. There were a lot of things that we needed to change, right? And on the note of, you know, the dishes fairy was not visiting our home in the early days of the pandemic when we were both here together all day long.
That's true.
And it was becoming a problem. So I will just share with you something we used in the beginning until we came up with a routine to handle our dishes better, which was we made up a fake coworker and we started blaming all of the things that we did to irritate each other around the house on her. So Celeste was really bad at putting her dishes in the dishwasher. Our fake coworker, Celeste, she often left her laundry unfolded. I don't know why a coworker had anything to do with laundry, but you know, we just had to make up this humorous scenario.
But it sounds like she was all over your house. I mean, that woman had no boundaries.
I mean, she didn't make the bed some days. We had to have a rule that, like, you know, as soon as you get up, you make the bed, you know.
Oh my God, she didn't take out the trash. I mean, who was this woman, really? Who let her in?
Who was she working for? We don't even know which of our companies she was working for. But yeah, we had to change some priorities and change some routines that we had in our house too. Just harmonious. And to be honest, I mean, I chose this person as my life roommate. So,
right. Well, yeah, that's a little bit different, I guess, than my situation. You actually want to be with that person and there's some kind of a kickback. Whereas anyone else, there's probably, you know, there's not that same kickback. I didn't have the love and support. So
this is true. But yeah. You also, you know, didn't have the fake roommate to blame it on either. So
I did not. I didn't, you know. So Whitney, my main priority shift, you had mentioned about just taking better care of your home since you were always in your space. Mine was just realizing that I needed to have complete control over my environment. And this goes back to everything I just said before, like, you know, realizing that there was incompatibilities over COVID protocols. And, you know, that was scary. It made me feel unsafe in my home to realize like I didn't really have control over this other person and where she was coming and going and who she was coming in contact with and what she was bringing into my home. So I realized like, wow, I really need to be in control of all this so that I can be safe and healthy and feel secure. Because if you feel unsafe in your own home, that is a huge problem.
Definitely a huge problem.
Yeah. I like to talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs that goes back to my education courses in college. And basically, do you know about Maslow?
I do. And shelter is at the bottom of the pyramid.
Yes, exactly. It's really a foundational element. And if you don't have that piece, like the rest of your pyramid comes crumbling down. So I definitely realized that I needed to have complete control. And then I sort of started realizing too, that I think maybe even prior to the COVID protocols that I really wanted everything the way that I wanted it. And so something else I would say to people is just be really clear with yourself and examine your thoughts and what you want and your reasons for a roommate before you actually get one. Because I think maybe if I would have thought about this a lot closer, I would have realized, like, you know, I really don't want a roommate. Like, I really was so ready to have control over my life and my space and my things and have, you know, my apartment. And unfortunately, I went into this roommate situation having that mentality, which I think was tough.
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget to ask ourselves what matters most to us in a situation before we start planning for a scenario.
Yeah. And I think in my head, I was just like, oh, I need a roommate because I live in a 2-bedroom apartment. It's not the cheapest thing in the world. Like, it helps to split. And so I just thought I had to fill in my old roommate's shoes and have another roommate. Maybe if I'd thought about it closer, that would have led me to having to move by myself or something. You know, I guess I wasn't maybe ready to find a new place at that point in time. And again, I thought I was going to go back to work and maybe not even be here that much. So definitely spend a little time getting clear on your and what you really want before interviewing somebody.
I think another thing that you really need to be clear about when speaking of roommates is making your expectations clear to your roommate from the start. In your case, Susan, it was, you know, a weird situation in general with the pandemic. So I'm not sure what the scenario was like about the expectations, but I'm sure that you wish you had set some stronger ground rules from the get-go.
Yeah. And this all connects to everything we've already talked about. Like, you know, first being really clear on what you want and what you expect and all these worst case scenarios and having sort of these plans and expectations in place for those worst case scenarios. Cause, you know, I would never think to say, make sure you lock the door. Like, cause that would just be assumed to me that this person would lock the door. But I think you have to, in your head, be like, oh, well, what if they don't lock the door? Like, you know, you need to expect those things. So I think you need to think like, well, what routines and behaviors am I expecting? Like, what's the procedure? And make those things very clear from the beginning. And Whitney, you and I last week were talking about how at the dorms at Penn State Altoona, at least I was talking about this to you, the RAs actually gave a roommate contract to each set of roommates to fill out and submit so that if there was ever a conflict, they could refer back to this and be like, oh, well, you said this and you agreed upon this. And I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, and it also made me think of Sheldon Cooper's roommate contract. I think it was called the roommate agreement from The Big Bang Theory. Although in that case, Susan, that entire contract was written by Sheldon and had several disaster clauses that I feel like potentially could have been helpful if you had thought of some things like that. I think he had an earthquake clause and a bunch of other like really weird, rare scenarios that he had planned for and had planned like so much that there was like a procedure to follow for each disaster that happened.
Yeah. I mean, earthquake clause is a little extreme, but I mean, then again, I'm sure like a few years ago, if we made a pandemic clause, that would also seem extreme and funny and it ended up being reality. So I do love this idea about making a roommate contract actually serious, but having some humor weaved in could really keep things light and make it more fun. So for example, in college, my two friends, actually, you know them, Dave, our friend Dave and his roommate, Bobby, they had some really silly things in their roommate contract. And I remember reading it and it was just hilarious. Like they would, you know, they had real things that they agreed upon, of course. But mostly the funny things are what stood out. Like they had on there, like, we must always use fabric softener for the fluffiest laundry. And then also they said something like, if the floor gets dirty, we will spray butter on the floor and lick it up. Like, it was ridiculous, but it was like hilarious. So that stands out to me. But
yeah, that reminds me of, we just gave my cousin one of our old vehicles as a gift. And my husband realized that in our state, which is New Hampshire, you can essentially draw up your own seller's contract or like gift agreement or whatever. And so my cousin is a New England Patriots fan. My husband is a Miami Dolphins fan. They are division rivals. So whenever we gave the car to my cousin, we left Miami Dolphins floor mats in it. And as a condition of the gift, he has to keep them in the car. It's a legal document that says he has to keep them in the car. And we put in there that he has to say, "Go Dolphins," every time he opens the driver's side door. So, I mean, obviously, like, you know, he's probably not going to follow it, but my husband got a kick out of writing a contract that had silly Dolphins related things in it. So.
Oh, no, that's amazing. I love that. And it makes something that's actually serious a little more, yeah, a little light. It adds some levity to it. So, yeah, I definitely think there should be things in your contract like, hey, if you have a friend over, at least give your roommate a heads up. You know, if you're not coming home, maybe let your roommate know so they don't worry and call the cops, you know, like, or if you use the last of ketchup or something, that you should replace it. But also maybe funny things like never let the wine supply run low, always have chocolate in the cabinet, you know, things like that. So love those ideas.
Yes. So Susan, what do you do when you want to part ways with these incompatible roommates? Maybe you could talk about how you handled your situation.
Yeah, sure. Well, first I'll say last year when my old roommate that I lived with for 3 years, when she moved out, it was just sort of a really natural, easy conversation. And to me, I already knew it was coming that she was going to move out with her boyfriend. It just made sense. They'd been together for a while. And she and I literally just had like a very casual conversation. It just seemed like the next step. It was so easily solved and not a big deal at all. And I was happy for them and all that. But this time it was tough, the situation I just went through, because, you know, after the COVID incompatibilities, my roommate and I actually had to isolate for the better part of at least like 5 months or so because we had those incompatibilities. It just got kind of awkward. So unfortunately, you know, not having that trust and that safety, it just sort of disintegrated what relationship we did have. So, you know, obviously it was awkward and I felt there was a lot of tension and I felt badly about it, but I didn't really know like how. We weren't going to be able to change that situation. We were just like, you know, irreconcilable differences. So I had made up my mind that I was going to not renew the lease with her and I was going to stay in my place because I'd lived here for 4 years. You know, I had brought her into the apartment. So I just approached her and told her that, you know, I had invited her in and it didn't work out the way that I think either of us thought it would. And clearly it wasn't going well. And I think it would be better if we just split ways, but I was going to stay because this was my place that she came into. And I just wanted her to have like more than enough notice to find her own place. But Whitney, that did not go well. She was really oppositional to it and upset. And I try to put myself in her shoes and think like, well, you know, if someone came up to me and basically told me that I had to leave, I think I would be upset. But I was just surprised at how she wouldn't have seen that coming. Like, to me, if I was living in a situation that was just so awkward and uncomfortable, like, I wouldn't want to stay. So I think maybe right. I was almost like projecting my feelings onto her. And I had no idea that, you know, she was completely fine, apparently.
Yes, but she also didn't own anything in the apartment. So I'm not sure what she would have done if you had moved out. She would have had to buy everything. Yeah.
I mean, to me, I was never trying to create a situation like I'm telling you what to do. But to me, it just made sense that she was the new one that came in. I owned everything. This was my place. And I just felt it was best for us to part ways. And I tried, you know, I did everything in the best, most respectful way that I could. I never raised my voice. Like, I made sure that she knew, like, it wasn't something personal to her. Like, I just wanted to live alone. You know, I gave her like more than 3 months' notice, which is actually even way more than you need to give. I think 60 days is probably what's standard. It was really tough because there was no other way to have that conversation other than to tell her I'd already made up my mind.
Right.
I wasn't going to pose it and say, oh, what are you doing next year? Like, let's talk about this, because that would be misleading, because I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to entertain that idea that we were going to continue. I knew what I wanted to do. And so I felt being direct was really clear.
Yeah. Although I feel like if you were Sheldon Cooper in this situation, you would have several clauses in your roommate agreement that would have explained that no matter what happens, you stay and the new person leaves.
That's true.
I think this is just more fuel for the roommate agreement fire.
No, I agree with you. I actually think that's a really great point, is that you should talk about, hey, what happens if we decide to part ways? And I think maybe that would have been something we would have decided on. Because I feel like at that point in the beginning, when we would have discussed this contract, she would have been there probably like a week. Like, I feel like there would be no way that she would have any ground to be like, oh, yeah, well, I'll stay and you'll go, you know? But after she had been there like 9 months, I could see where she was like, well, this is my home too. Totally get that. I just feel like, yeah, my point was I didn't know how else to handle it because I just think being direct is the best method, being clear is kind.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to mislead her at all. And it was one of those things, I liken it to like a divorce. No matter which way you look at it, that split is not going to be fun or a happy situation, but it is what it is, right?
Right. And it's better just, as you said, to be clear and honest upfront and let the chips fall where they may.
Yes. And so, but I did want to throw this out to our listeners. If anyone had any thoughts on maybe how I could have handled this differently, or, you know, what have you done in a sticky roommate situation? Please feel free to share those thoughts with us.
Susan, I'm wondering what your biggest takeaway from this experience has been.
Oh gosh, where do I start? Well, I have several. One of them is obviously to never assume that you know what's going on in a situation or that you know what the other person is thinking and feeling, because clearly I messed that up. I thought my roommate was feeling extreme tension like I was, but she was apparently completely okay.
Feeling least, blissfully, you know, ignorant.
at least she was to what she told me. I mean, maybe she just didn't want to admit that so that I would kind of be right, but in any case, obviously you really can't know what someone's thinking until you ask, right? So the idea here is ask until you know. Clarifying questions are key. Over ask almost. Like, I heard you say this. Is this what you meant? Like, clarify. So I got this idea, Whitney, from Don Miguel Ruiz's The Four Agreements book. And the third agreement is don't make assumptions. And I feel like that's a great rule of thumb.
It also makes me think of the don't assume because it makes...
an ass you and me. No, it's true. I mean, you know, sometimes I feel like something's so clear in our minds and we just think there's no way someone else can't feel that way. But let me tell you, there is a way that somebody else can feel differently. You just, you know, you have to be clear with how you feel.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes we just miss that point entirely, right? We are so in our own heads and our own feelings that we forget that there are other things that could be occupying, you know, the other person's mind, right, that have nothing to do with the situation.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even aside from asking clarifying questions and don't assume, I think if you're just clear about how you feel, that might even take care of those other pieces. Like if I would have said, like, I'm really uncomfortable, like I'm not happy, maybe, you know, maybe then she would have opened up about how she was feeling naturally as a, you know what I mean? Like maybe just me being more clear from the beginning.
Right.
So, but crystal clear, not just like, oh, I'm unhappy, but we're going to gut this out, but be like, I'm unhappy and we're not going to renew. Right. But, you know, I also think getting things in writing is really important. Like we talked about with the contract, you have to have that kind of stuff written down because otherwise it becomes kind of a game of like, well, you said, or, you know, kind of like a he said, she said type of a thing.
Right.
Don't wait until the last minute to have these conversations. I think I did play that card really well because I talked to my roommate prior to 3 months out. So yeah, it was like more than 90 days notice. And I think that was perfect. If it had been any less, I would have kind of taken away some of my power by waiting so last minute and not giving them time to plan and think and things like that. And, you know, I would have looked like I didn't prepare.
Right.
And also another takeaway is to make sure that you know your rights as a tenant and any resources that you can use to help you through these difficult situations and to support you.
This was so interesting to me, Susan, because I had never even considered this thought or knew about any of the places where I had rented if there were any resources like this. So tell us more about what you learned.
Yeah. And I'll say, Whitney, that maybe you didn't even need to know about these resources because you had probably a pretty good rental situation, kind of went off without a glitch, and you didn't need to question your rights or things like that. And that's probably a good thing. But I was thinking that this would also be good information for first-time renters or young professionals to know before they go into renting for the first time, because, you know, it will make you informed and it will carry over to your whole renting life, which could go on for a while. I'm still renting.
Right. Depending on where you live, sometimes renting makes sense for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. So a couple of things. One is to be sure, and this isn't a community resource, but this is just something that you should be familiar with, is to know your lease really well. Make sure you have that thing read through many times. If you need to clarify anything with your landlord before signing, do that. Make sure you have either a printed copy and or digital copies easily accessible on your computer, because mine was just buried in my email somewhere in an attachment and I had to look for it for a while. So it should be more readily available. Make sure you get a full lease every year, not an addendum. And what that means is, like this past year when I signed, my landlord just sent me the last page with the signature line, but I didn't have the rest of the pages. And I feel like that's not, no, you need to get the entire document, whether it's 10 pages with the new contract every year. I think in advance, you want to think about what you want your living situation to be like and what you want your rights to be like so that you can possibly have those things written into your lease. So Whitney, for example, you know, I was assuming that the apartment was mine because I had lived there first and it was kind of like this social agreement, right? But in the lease, it didn't say that. We were basically co-signers on this lease and technically, legally, we had the same amount of rights. So I think if I could do it again, and this is what a housing counselor advised me about, is that I could have had the lease written where I was really the main tenant and this new roommate would be written in under me so that I would have maybe veto power over my roommate and I really would be the one to have the say. So definitely I would have done that again differently.
That almost made me think like if you sublet your apartment, how mm-hmm. that person is kind of like under you on the mm-hmm. sublet. So I was wondering if that's,
yes,
in all senses of the word, is that kind of like how this would work too?
Yes. And in fact, that's kind of how I was always viewing it in my mind. I like, even when I interviewed her, I was like, hey, you know, I'm really excited to make this my own place. Like now that my roommate's gone, because before my roommate had furnished the whole place and she was the one that had lived there previously. So I felt like kind of naturally she was the one in charge. Right. This is just by default of who was there first. So I kind of said like, hey, this is my place. I'm excited to make it my own. I'm painting, I'm getting all new furniture. And like, I'd love to have you rent this room. That's how it really was presented. However, it wasn't written that way. So, you know, these are things to consider if your landlord's even willing to do that, but it's something to ask about.
Yeah, that's a very important distinction, I feel.
Yes. Another thing that came to my mind recently, or my attention recently, was to make sure your landlord changes the locks after each roommate or tenant moves out. I recently just had my locks changed because my roommate took the key and I was feeling nervous that there was a copy of my keys floating around. But if you think about it, how many people have rented my apartment over the years and may have a copy of the key? It's really not that safe if you think about how many copies are floating around in the world. So just for safety, I think it's always a good idea to have the locks changed when a roommate moves out. Unless you super, super trust that person, like it's someone you know, like a close friend or family. But if it's anyone that's random, I think definitely get your locks changed. And then lastly, I would see if your community has any community resources that help with tenant-landlord disputes or sticky housing situations. So you could ask around or look online. I actually found out just through a friend. I was telling her the situation and she was like, oh, you need to check out Turn. And then I looked them up online, but you know, your community might have other ways to access these resources, like a listing somewhere. Or here in Philly, we have this, I guess it's a nonprofit organization called Equally Informed Philly. And it's like a text line. Like you can text them any question about anything. And they'll text you back resources and answers. So I don't know if that's just a Philly thing, but maybe other cities have something like that, where if you're like, hey, I'm in a landlord situation, like what resources can help? And then maybe they'll be able to shoot you some contacts.
Yeah, I had no idea. That's a great resource.
Yeah, in Philadelphia, what I ended up using, they have a nonprofit called Tenant Union Representative Network, TURN, which offers free advice from housing counselors. They offer weekly webinars that go through sort of just like basic rights and things like that. And they also have a lawyer on that call that you can ask sort of general questions. And then they do have free legal consultation where you can get a one-on-one with a lawyer on their team and, you know, go over specifics like your lease and your specific situation. And that was an amazing resource that I wish I had known about so much earlier. So don't wait until you're in a bad situation to seek out these resources. If you're a renter, especially if you're a young professional just starting out and you might be a little bit naive, be proactive and do your homework. Educate yourself to protect yourself from entering into these kinds of situations. You know, as I said before, think worst case scenario. It's better to be prepared.
Yeah, Susan, thank you for sharing those. That's a lot of great information that I never knew about and probably could have benefited from when I was new to renting in my early 20s. Thanks for sharing all of that. Hopefully our listeners can benefit from that information as well.
Yeah, of course. I always think that going through hard situations is worth it if we can help someone else avoid the mistakes we made and to help them be more successful in their own situation. So hopefully that's what will happen here. And the last thing I wanted to add is that even though we kind of were talking about all these negative things, I do want to say that it also can be extremely positive living with someone else. You know, living with a random roommate can be a huge risk that may not pay off, but it could also be very positive and it could pay off. So I'm still really good friends with my first roommate that I lived with. And I feel like I did get a lot of great benefits out of living with her over the years. I always had someone to do things with. So I feel like I had a great experience living with her and I wouldn't have had that if I hadn't have taken the gamble. But you know, yeah, like I said, sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't, but it can be really, really positive.
And I'll just mention that, you know, I had a few roommates that I didn't know before I lived with them who were fantastic. My first roommate in college was fantastic. I didn't know her before we moved in together. I, you know, learned a lot from her and wish we were in similar countries today because we might still be friends. And actually, one of my very first roommates, after we graduated college, Susan, she and I have remained friends over the years, and we actually went to each other's weddings. So mm-hmm. It can be a great situation, and it can be a super fun situation. The roommate that I had after college, you remember, brought so much fun into our lives, your life too, because...
Oh, yes, the Turkish party that we had, that's you're talking about Shebnem, right?
Yes.
That was so much fun. Shebnem was Turkish and her parents came to visit from Turkey and had sort of like a barbecue picnic with music and all this delicious food. And she brought us bracelets from Turkey, these beaded bracelets. I probably still have it. It was so much fun. I loved it.
I loved living there with Sheb and also her brother Shafak because it was like I learned so much about Turkish culture because Shafak at one point was the president of this Turkish Students Association on campus, I believe, because he was a grad student. And so we always had Turkish students over, like playing Turkish music because he was in a Turkish band. And it was a lot of fun. So I think that that's like a great example of how a random roommate situation turned out to be a great time.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you can get a lot of positive benefits. I keep saying positive, but it's true. It's the best word to use. You can get all these good benefits out of a roommate situation or a random person. And even if you do have a situation that's negative, I mean, obviously we just went through a whole episode of things learned. So, you know, I got a lot out of it in that sense.
Yes, absolutely.
So Whitney, to close out the topic, I wanted to share the words of wisdom that I alluded to in our intro. When I was having to confront my roommate, it's probably after I did confront her, I was saying to you, it feels incredibly uncomfortable. And you said to me, it's always going to feel uncomfortable until it's a habit. And I said, I guess you have to feel incredibly uncomfortable in order to grow. And you said, Rome wasn't built in a day and neither is your comfort zone. And I love that so much. Thank you.
I had totally forgotten I said that to you until you brought that up on this call.
I looked back in my text because I remember that was really profound because I was like, yeah, you're right. Like you don't learn these lessons overnight or in the snap of a finger, right? Yeah, it's going to take
time. Learning and growing is hard and sometimes painful.
Yeah, and it's okay to feel uncomfortable. That's normal. I think sometimes we beat ourselves up like, oh, wow, that was hard. And it's like, yeah, because things are hard. That's completely normal.
Things are hard, but in the words of Glennon Doyle, we can do hard things.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, exactly. And we must continually work at the things that make us feel uncomfortable. Like that's what life is all about. And it's going to sound really cliche, but so true.
Yes. So speaking of words of wisdom, Susan, we'd love to hear advice from our listeners about the roommate problems we mentioned here today or to share wisdom for handling some different roommate situations that they've experienced. Please send us an email with all of your roommate stories and tips to susanandwhitney@gmail.com.
Great. Awesome. I can't wait to hear some wisdom and stories. So now it's time for our segment, speaking of stories, novel ideas, in which we discuss what we are currently reading or watching. Whitney, what's on your nightstand or on your TV lately?
Susan, I just finished reading The Lazy Genius Way by Kendra Adachi, which was fantastic. I know that I've mentioned her to you before and you aren't quite familiar with her yet, but it's basically a book on how to change your life in a way so that you can be lazy about the things that don't matter and genius about the things that do is kind of her tagline. And it was super helpful and inspiring. And the other book that I'm reading right now is The Hunting Party by Lucy Foley. I loved her book, The Guest List. I thought it was a really great, very thought-provoking and different kind of mystery, but in very well-written mystery. So as soon as I had finished that one earlier in the year, I put this one on my library holds list and it just came in. So I'm about halfway through it.
Oh, that's great. Actually, I have that book on my library holds list too. Not The Hunting Party, but The Guest List.
It was great. Really, you'll love it.
Yeah. So you recommend both or The Hunting Party?
Yes. I'm only halfway through it so far. The Guest List surprised me I was like shocked by how much I loved it. So I don't know if that, if The Hunting Party is that good, but it's getting there so far.
No, good. Sounds like good beach reads. I love reading some compelling mysteries and things like that. So that's awesome. Yeah. So Whitney, I actually just finished listening to this novel called No, No Boy by John Akata. I'm sure you probably haven't heard of it, or have you?
I haven't heard of it.
This is a sort of a forgotten piece of literature. And apparently it's the first piece of what's considered the first piece of Japanese American literature.
Oh,
and I think this book really went unnoticed. And there's a whole story in the foreword of the book about how I think an author or someone found it in a used bookstore. And then, you know, it was like, wow, this is great. This needs to get out there. And there was a renaissance. And my friend heard a review about this book on NPR during Asian Heritage Month. And she brought this to my attention, and I just finished reading it. And it was really profound, because the book, well, No, No, is in response to during World War II, when the government sent out a questionnaire to Americans about whether or not they would serve in the armed forces and swear loyalty to the United States. If you answered no to both those questions, you were considered a no-no boy. And the book is a lot about how the Japanese Americans, after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, they were really ostracized because the government started questioning all Japanese American citizens, even though they were American, right? So they put them into the internment camps. And, you know, it's a little bit about after World War II, what this character who said no to this, these two questions, he didn't go into the armed services. He actually ended up going into jail for not, for saying no, no, twice. And so it's about like how he's dealing with life after the war, you know, how his family is reacting to him coming back from jail. And it's really just about how Japanese Americans of all different types are handling life after World War II. It's really fascinating. And I feel like this is something that's not talked about. I didn't really know anything about the Japanese American story, and specifically this issue with not fighting for the US. And I just think it was really fascinating and enlightening. And I'm really glad that I listened to it.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you had read it or
listened. I did. Well, I have the book, and actually I started out that I was going to read it, and I realized like I just didn't have time, but I have so much time to listen because I can do that in the car or while I'm getting ready in the morning. And I, you know, I obviously can't sit there and read a novel while I'm getting ready for work. So I was able to get this done over audio, and I do recommend that genre. I liked the narrator.
That sounds great. We'll have to add that to my TBR list.
Yeah. And it is really serious, but I think, again, like that's important to hear those serious stories. Obviously this isn't going to be a light story, but it's something that I think I'm glad that I know more about.
Right. Absolutely. Next, Susan, we have our Sunshines and Monsoon segment, in which we discuss challenges and bright spots in our lives recently. Susan, you're up for a monsoon this week.
All right. Well, my monsoon incidentally deals with sort of the same topics I was talking about, this whole like housing situation. Now the roommate is not here anymore, but there's still a situation going on with my landlord. We had signed a new lease back in April, and the landlord has now decided he doesn't want to honor the terms of the lease. And fortunately, I consulted with that community organization and got a legal consult that the lawyer told me, like, hey, you're in a lease. There's no such thing as waffling on it. So I know that my rights are that I'm in a lease and this guy can't change his mind. But, you know, still trying to sort that out right now and figure out how to best handle this. But I do feel good that I have the upper hand in this situation. So bit of a monsoon, but hopefully it ends in a sunshine.
I think it'll end in a sunshine. I think you so. You know your rights now, and it's just sunshine all the way forward.
Yes.
All right. Yes. So, Susan, my sunshine is to the Lazy Genius's Change Your Life Chicken.
Mm.
I did not, when I first read this recipe, which you can find on at the Lazy Genius on Instagram or at thelazygeniuscollective.com. Both places have the recipe. Whenever I saw something that said change your life chicken, I was like, I don't think it can change my life. Like, really? that's a bold saying for chicken.
It's a pretty big billing right there, though. I feel like I would probably listen to that.
Right. So I tried it, which is essentially, it's like a sheet pan meal where you cook chicken and vegetables, and you can swap in whatever vegetables. You can change the seasonings. It's kind of like, it's a very adaptable meal. I tried it a few times, and Nate is kind of obsessed with it, and it's so easy. And if I make it for dinner, I look kind of like a genius because
of course.
It's one of those things that like it cooks itself in one pan that you can throw the foil away and just like wipe the pan down. Like it really could change your life. I can imagine, especially if I were feeding more than two people, this would be life-changing chicken. So shout out to Kendra Adachi, the lazy genius, change your life chicken. It is life-changing.
Wow, Whitney. So that's awesome that it makes you look really good. Do you think that Celeste, your coworker, is going to get any credit for whipping together this meal, or is it definitely you?
I think Celeste was fired a few months ago because she hasn't been leaving her dirty dishes around.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, good. That was a good choice then.
Join us next time when we pick up where we left off and continue the conversation.
Check us out on Instagram at Susan and Whitney or send us an email at susanandwhitney@gmail.com.
That's S-U-S-A-N, the word and, W-H-I-T-T-N-E-Y.
Our awesome music is by Offshane, and our scripting and editing is by us.
Talk to you later.
Yay, I think we did a good job.